And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
And welcome to episode 19 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me tonight is Chris. Chris, how you doing?
Hey, doing good. Pretty happy now that I actually have a stable table within my own bedroom as kind of a mini office comes together here. And where the microphone won't be dropping like last week's episode, to say the least.
Did you watch Dark? Because despite what I said last week about trying to make us make some time, I could not. So
no, I did manage to catch it, and I fairly enjoyed the episode for the most part, from top to bottom, which was very surprising.
Well, go ahead. Run it down.
So let's just break it down. Yeah. So we did open it with Riho versus Shoko Nakajima out of Tokyo Joshi Pro.
Oh, damn.
The two had a really fun match together. Big fan of it. Riho picked up the pinfall after the running double knees. After that, we had a very pleasantly surprising good match between Sunny Kiss and Jimmy Havoc, and the weird thing is, there was none of the sort of like hardcore deathmatch-esque nods from Havoc. They just wrestled really a clean technical style match where he worked Sunny Kiss's left arm throughout the entirety of the match, and it played in the finish, which was a rolling arm bar with the joint manipulation of the fingers. So by far Jimmy Havoc's best outing in AEW.
I refuse to believe that Jimmy Havoc had a good match in AEW. I refuse to believe this.
I mean, you can go see it for yourself at any point in time. It's on YouTube now. After that, we had Hikaru Shida against, it was a local person as well, Cassandra, I'm blanking out on the name because I don't have the actual sheet in front of me, so apologies on that, but that was a decent match as well, a good display for Hikaru Shida, who picked up the victory. And then your main event was a tag team match between Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy of the Jurassic Express against the Dark Order, Stu, Grayson, and Evil Uno. Good tag match to close things out as well. Showed, you know, all four men's, you know, chaputza, if you will, and Dark Order picked up the victory on that one.
But so, they're really going with the Jungle Boy Marco Stunt tandem for Dark, aren't they?
Yeah, for the most part. It seems like they're focusing on that just because it feels like they're trying to save Luchasaurus for something big down the line. It's just a matter of, like, when's that going to be at this point? We're waiting. So,
oh, wait, you kind of dropped for a second there. I just want to let you know that. I don't know if you're muting or something. Yeah, it was kind of like you kind of dropped for a second. But anyway.
No mutes as far as I can tell here. So apologies for technicalities.
Worries.
This is why we don't get paid, folks.
No, this is totally. Yeah, if we got paid for this, we would have been fired a while ago. So, but on that note, we go live to Austin, Texas for AEW Dynamite episode 19. Live from the HEB Center, which my brother, who lives in Austin, and it is his birthday today, so happy birthday, Jim. I know he said he wasn't going to be here because he has not watched wrestling since the Attitude Era, which it doesn't make him very different from a lot of people, actually, but
yeah, very true.
But anyway, he says he drives by this place on the daily, so it's like he says it's not too far from his house, so just up the road. But anyway, your hosts from the HEB Center in Austin, Texas, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur, and we start off with the AEW World Tag Team Championship match, Kenny Omega and Adam Page defending against Frankie Kazarian and Scorpio Sky. I had this pegged for the main event of the show, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
so did I.
Was not to be. And we didn't even get intros. They were just already in the ring. Like this is like, you know, the old studio shows or something.
Yeah, and it turned out there was a point to that because just immediately before we got even a bell to ring after introductions, Titantron video appears. There's the Dark Order basically saying that, hey, everybody in this match, you know, keep a very close eye because more members of the Dark Order might be closer than it appears. And not to mention the Exalted Ones coming soon. And when the time's right, we'll strike. And yep. That was that.
It's Matt Hardy at this point, isn't it?
I mean, he would have to be a high enough name at this point if they're just letting him get out of his WWE contract. And if there isn't any sort of, like, no-compete clause with it, I would say he's a prime candidate for it. But who knows?
Regardless, Christopher Daniels decided to take it to the bank. I mean, at this point, it'd almost be too obvious that it is Christopher Daniels, given his history.
It's the whole red herring thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So it is just Omega and Paige and SCU out. A little bit of a convenient heel turn by SCU in this match, isn't it?
Somebody had to play the role of sort of the aggressors, boo this team because they're doing, like, somewhat sneaky tag team tactics. But then again, for those who might not be as familiar with the SoCal Uncensored trio, they were heels for the longest time up until really the past year and a half or so, where their popularity picked up considerably due to being...
I'm going to go with since the AEW Tag Team Tournament, when they inexplicably made this babyface turn. But, you know, of course, they are up against an executive vice president and not executive vice president, but close enough. So, you know, of course, everybody is heels when they're against the elite. Of course.
Yeah.
But anyway, overall, the match, not bad. It wasn't bad. And Omega and Paige actually seemed like they were on the same page for once.
Yes.
And they retain. And yeah, so there you go. They have a defense of the World Tag Team Championships. And post-match, we had a little bit of a preview for the 10-team Tag Team Battle Royal next week in Atlanta.
Yes, and a couple things to point out during the match, too. I do really like the Buckshot Lariat V-Trigger combination. It's kind of like a full-fledged finish for that team itself. It does look... They've managed to make that look pretty gnarly outright with the way it hits. A bit of controversy at the end, too, where it showed Kazarian getting his hand on the bottom rope, I think just as the three count hit. So it's kind of one of those, like, where the SCU might again have another case for one of these down the line.
Yeah, I noticed that. I wonder, I didn't notice if it was just, did he get onto it too late, which could be fair, or, you know, was it a referee botch, or what?
Yeah, it is a little bit curious, but we'll let that play out accordingly. Another big thing that I think we both noticed and kind of rolled our eyes at is just all these teams are showing up, but oh, no Penta, no Phoenix in sight. Oh God, what's happening here?
Well, actually,
we'll get back to that later.
Yeah, we'll get back to that later because it answers a bone I had to pick last week. But anyway, so when we come back from commercial, we have a pre-taped interview between Jim Ross and Santana, and it wasn't bad, you know. It wasn't bad, you know. They went through, you know, how Santana's father started going blind at 14, and so, you know, they try to add some a bit of sympathy to Santana, you know, from this monster Moxley.
And it's the realization at that point that you knew, okay, so this is what's main eventing in this situation, and it was a good build up towards just emphasizing the point that this was going to be an all-out fight between two guys who had their eyes taken out, respectively. So,
right. Following that, we had another Darby Allin video where he was riffing on Sammy Guevara's, Bob Dylan impersonation.
Indeed.
Through which he challenged Sammy Guevara to a match at Revolution.
That should be fun between them. They're both dynamic, they're young, and they've got styles that particular kind of style that I think could really make for some breakneck kind of reversals, counters, and the like. So I'm excited to see it.
This led right into the second match of the evening, in which the aforementioned Sammy Guevara with Jake Hager, of course, taking on the returning. Is it the returning, really? He's been in matches since then. Dustin Rhodes.
Yes, I believe this would be his first singles match since the New Year's Day match, in which he got his arm kayfabe broken. So, and it's
whoa,
a rematch
time
against
out, time
him.
Out. No, no, no.
Or,
his,
wait,
I thought
no,
his
this
arm
is
got,
before that.
Yeah, I say his arm got broken during the buildup to Jericho versus Cody Rhodes.
No, you're right. I misspoke on that.
Yeah, that was a while ago, but. Mm-hmm. Whatever the case, Dustin Rhodes wins. The match was okay. Not much to write home about. Really, it was just build so Dustin could challenge that MAGA chud Jake Hager to an actual pay-per-view match, which means his in-ring debut will be at Revolution.
Mm-hmm. We did get confirmation of that later in the show, but
Kai-A.
Well, Jeff, I think at the very least you know which match you can use the bathroom on now.
Yeah, I may be skipping that match. I may be going for a walk around the Wintrust Arena for that match. So.
There you go.
When that's all done, Tony Schiavone has another ill-fated interview with Dr. Britt Baker. And
his favorite person in the world, by the way, folks,
yes,
in case
yes,
you haven't noticed.
Yeah. I mean, what more can we say about this? Just, yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. We've ragged on for weeks about Britt's ability inside of the ring not living up to par to what we sort of want this women's division to be. But at the very least, the promo work has been improving consistently on a week-to-week basis to where, hey, if you can make people pay money to see you get beaten up, you're doing your job, so
well,
good on her for that.
Yeah, except there may be a little bit of a derailment in those plans as match 3 comes up, and it's the AEW women's title match as Riho defends against the native beast Nyla Rose. And I'm just going to go out and say this was the best match of the evening.
Yeah, 100%.
I absolutely enjoyed this match quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, their match for the inaugural crowning of the champion to begin with was phenomenal, and this lived up to it as well. They have
that was on the pilot episode of Dynamite, way back in episode 1. You can go back and relive episode 1 on Boom Goes the Dynamite episode 1.
Yeah, you can relive the fact that many moons ago we made this decision and nobody went ahead and tried to stop us. So here we are, still.
And we're still here. So, that being said, that was a good match. I don't have anything specifically. I did like Riho being the aggressor at first. I thought that was a good move.
Mm-hmm.
And it set the tone, but like I said, I don't have anything specific to say about the match, about any particular sequences or anything like that. But yeah, I love this match, and I would definitely rewatch it.
Mm-hmm. Big stuff at the end with the running knees being countered into a spear, Beast Bomb finally doing it, and Nyla is your second AEW World Women's Champion.
Time out. Hang on. So you notice that now that the titles have changed hands in the reverse order that they were crowned to begin with.
Yes.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, first we had the world championship, then the women's, then the tag team. Well, now the tag team titles have changed hands, and now the women's title has changed hands.
Yes.
Revolution, perhaps?
Yeah, it could be. It could very much follow that cycle there. The biggest thing I would say to consider moving forward is, and something that I wouldn't be surprised if they grow into one of the either AEW Dark next week around or in some sort of video for the All Elite Wrestling channel that they have on YouTube there. But in the aftermath of this, for those who did have the Fight TV or bootleg stream, whatever you want to call it, you saw in the aftermath not much of a celebration for Nyla Rose backstage after coming through the curtain, if you will. Kenny Omega trying to handshake her accordingly. Nyla wasn't having any of it. She was asking around the audience, like, well, where's my celebration? Where's all the congratulations from people? Where's the bubbly? Like, I could use a little bit of the bubbly right now. And Nyla just interpreting it not only as blatant disrespect, but basically going to Kenny Omega like, nah, this is just the beginning. When he was trying to say, nah, it's over, you can just go now. He's just like, no. She went, no, this is just the beginning. And yeah, Nyla Rose is just going to fuck up some people in this division, and I cannot wait to see it.
And here she is, to see it. And she's here murking Kenny Omega, too. Just, you know.
You love to see it.
You know, I've been saying for weeks that Nyla Rose has been one of the consistent bright spots in AEW. She hasn't always had it in the ring, but I mean, I have not enjoyed anything she's done so far. And I mean, like I said, that even that little feud with Shanna,
it was phenomenal. It was a nice mini feud that kind of kept you compelled for a couple of the Dark episodes there.
It was like Dark had its own thread going, and it turned out to be like the best thing on AEW programming in weeks. Now, I don't know where the hell Chris Statlander's been.
She was in the segment, actually, because they did have a couple of the, women.
Yeah, because I mean, it was
the picture in picture for TNT, yes. But no, it was Statlander. Baker, and then a couple of the other girls. Big Swole was in it as well, too, just kind of looking at the whole situation between Nyla Rose and Kenny Omega as it was happening on the background. So they did hint at the fact that, you know, these are the women that are going to be her competition in the division moving forward. So
because,
a little threat set up there. So.
Yeah, because give me a Chris Statlander and Nyla Rose feud right now.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
That's
going to
be
that's money right there.
That is going to be money for me when it happens. So, but anyway, thanks TNT for ruining a another promo, you know, because of the stupid split screen.
And something kind of important too, unfortunately, on top of it. But eventually when we come back from the commercials, we'd get the whole, hey, Cody Rhodes got lashed like 10 times last week.
No, hold on. Whoa. You missed something.
Oh,
you
wait.
Missed,
before
you missed
that, no, you're right.
Chris Jericho and the Inner Circle, and they dropped a bombshell that next week, Jon Moxley, you know, at the behest of the Inner Circle, Jon Moxley will be facing Jeff Cobb.
My goodness.
We
knew he was out of ROH for a while there, but yeah, he's...
So is
landed
he signed
some
it? So is he signed to AEW?
I wouldn't be surprised. I think they did a congratulatory tweet on AEW's Twitter saying welcome to AEW, I guess. So it might be official.
Geez. Does that mean he's out of New Japan too?
I mean,
or do you think maybe he negotiated it, because let's face it, New Japan were pretty high on him too.
Yes, definitely so, but wait and see approach in that regard. So
yeah. I mean,
take a look over the upcoming weeks.
I mean, that would be a shame if Cobb isn't working New Japan anymore. But you know, if we get to see him on, you know, assuming they don't book him like an asshole, you know, seeing him on weekly TV, that's you know something we can, you know, maybe work with.
Sink our teeth into, absolutely.
Yeah. So yes, on that note, so then we get the recap of Cody being whipped and one of the most questionable things I've seen on wrestling TV in a while. And then, Brandi Rhodes joins the commentary team for the next match. But before we do that, can we briefly discuss the drama that seems to be erupting because of the abrupt end of the Nightmare Collective angle?
Which, again, I don't get when you could look at the actual circumstances in which, first and foremost, the most important part is that it wasn't working. Considering that you already had a cult-like angle that has been happening longer and far more consistently with the Dark Order, to add this on top of it.
Which also has had its issues too, let's be honest.
True, very true. But, you know, extra convolution never helps anyone in any way, shape, or form. And the other big thing is Globe still has another season to record, and Awesome Kong is a huge part of that show. So at some point or another, like, they knew that she was going to have to bail out for a little while to get that started. So really, the timing just sort of worked out in and of itself to just say, hey, this idea really didn't work to begin with, so let's just cut our losses here and go home.
Yeah, well, from what I understand, there seems to be some backstage drama now, though, between Brandy and, I guess, the de facto booker of the women's division, a.k.a. Kenny Omega.
Kenneth Omega. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, if Kenny's the one who made the call on ending this whole Nightmare Collective thing, he's not wrong in making that call at all.
I mean, it just seemed, I mean, really, this whole thing was just a waste of Awesome Kong. And I mean, when you see the push and the booking that Nyla Rose has been getting, and then you just wonder, wait a minute, this maybe if Nyla Rose wasn't there, this would have been Awesome Kong, you know?
But then again, you can even argue whether that would have been Kong's thing to begin with, in the fact that Kong is much older than Nyla Rose has had. Far more bumps in the process too, and with Glow having, you know, to record another season,
well,
they
yeah,
probably didn't want to risk the bumps to begin with.
Well, that,
thing,
that much is true.
Taking, so.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we love Awesome Kong, I don't know if Awesome Kong would have been able to pull off that feud with Shanna, like, for example.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
But I mean,
for sure.
You could see that is usually the sort of push that Awesome Kong would have gotten.
Yeah,
you know,
I see where you're coming from with that now. Yeah,
but, I mean, I see your point too. Is that, you know, Netflix is protecting their investment too.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, 100%. Netflix is a bit more powerful than AEW right now. So
yeah, that definitely is very much the case. That said, though, I will say that with this next match, the one thing that I didn't like out of it was the fact that the announcers didn't seem to play up the fact that this match was actually set up in a way through Twitter, with Jungle Boy taking a couple of shots at MJF outright during the course of the week, when MJF decided to like post a video of himself like lifting weights or something, and then Jungle Boy came back at him with something along the lines of like basically just poking fun at the fact that he wasn't even like benching that much. And then MJF's like, well, I'll just see you in the ring next week kind of thing. And, dang, there's a match.
Yeah.
So.
Funny, because the thing I did not like about this match was the match. I thought this match was not great at all. But maybe you can plead your case,
it
too.
It could have been much worse, but it does feel like it's one of those matches where both guys just needed something to do for the week. And MJF needed somebody to basically beat up on to go, hey, this is what's going to happen to Cody, blah, 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 blah. He's got to get past Wardlow, just to basically further that story without having Cody involved in any way.
Well,
so,
except they did, because, you know, MJF, made a taunt of Brandy while grabbing his nuts. You know, I'm not going to quote the Cool Keith line, but, grabbing his nuts, like, my God, in some ways, he really is a throwback to, like, you know, the Attitude Era Shane McMahon or something, you know?
Yeah.
In the way he comports himself, which is probably part of the reason why I can't stand him. And
MJF is the Mean Street Posse of 2020.
Yeah,
let's just call it what it is.
Right, which is why I'm like really not into him right now. You know, I'm not into this character, and you know, we've already, you know, the whole thing about how, you know, Big Boy Wardlow, when DDP stood, you know, stood over him by a couple of inches, you know.
R.I.P. in pieces, and
you know
he beats up Jungle Boy in the aftermath of the match and wants no piece of Luchasaurus whatsoever, because Luchasaurus is in fact bigger and badder than him.
Yeah.
So
I'm also going to point out that, oh my God, we had our first appearance in AEW of the WWE guy watching the monitor in the back angle.
And I think it went to commercial breaks on TNT when that happened.
No, it did. They cut right back to the match. They showed it, and then they cut right back to the match.
Okay, so you did hear commentary basically poking fun at that aspect, too.
Yeah, they did, but I was like, oh my god, they actually did this. And with Arn freaking Anderson.
Yep. I mean, there was a good gag there for a couple of seconds. I will give them that much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
But from less than stellar, we do move on to like something that was completely stellar, and that was Pac, who has been just so great during this entire run so far.
This promo was excellent. This is like a very close second to the best part of the show next to that women's match. I love this promo so much. Except he called it Chicago, not Hoffman Estates. Because we all know it was Hoffman Estates.
Sure. But it does not only do that, but it also sets up what's going to be coming in the next 2 weeks, which is going to be a 30-minute Ironman match, the rubber match between Kenny Omega and Pac. It's happening on Dynamite, and they could deliver something special here if everything goes right. So,
well, that, you know what? That tells me that if they're doing this on a Dynamite episode, that tells me that, you know, well, they also announced a, they showed the 10-man Battle Royal, the 10-team Battle Royale lineup. I noticed that the Lucha Brothers were not there. But then, because they immediately followed that with Omega and Paige will be defending against the Lucha Bros, did they just give away the result of that match? Because they can't tie Kenny Omega to him versus Pac, because he'll have to defend the titles at Revolution.
Yeah, it does make you wonder. But it's one of those situations where we'll wait and see until next week is through, basically. Yeah. So,
but
hard to foretell at the moment. But I can see where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, so I think they gave that away. But can we also mention how, once again, Pac's promo was masterful because it was 100% correct. Kenny Omega has not been, you know, the best bout machine, you know, since All Out. Let's face it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's been basically the crux of that entire story if you really go back into it all. So
yeah, and the last the last pay-per-view match that Kenny Omega had, he got his ass handed to him by Jon Moxley.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
may have not counted against to the records at that point because unsanctioned rules, but yeah, it was him getting beaten, and you could even argue to an extent too that Double or Nothing as well, with losing to Jericho in the fashion that he did, sort of was what kick-started a lot of this. And then the Pac chokeout during All Out was just the nail in the coffin as to why he's been on the streak that he's been. So,
yeah.
Although we have not told that story well at many points, it is a story. We can definitely acknowledge that much.
Speaking of which, on that, we've been neglecting to mention they did announce Double or Nothing 2020. During Memorial Day weekend, May 23rd, at the MGM Grand again.
Yes, indeed. That Vegas is going to be the home for them every year now going forward, from the looks of it.
Does that mean we're going to have All Out again in Hoffman Estates again? During Liberty?
Could be.
I mean, I'm kind of hoping that they actually, it's nice that, you know, if they want to still run Hoffman Estates, but I'm kind of hoping just for, you know, the sake of other fans that, you know, maybe they go elsewhere too.
True. But again, the company's still in its infancy, so I could see them for at the very least the first 2-3 years having those specific big shows and specific arenas that they know they've been able to draw in before taking that leap. So
yeah,
it's something we can probably examine a year from now once we have more data, as well as knowing how they're doing in certain markets as well. So
yeah, true that. So Oh, lastly, I just want to say that, you know, this has been a good feud, even though, let's face it, Pac's been carrying this whole feud, like, literally. Like, Kenny Omega doesn't even seem to acknowledge this feud half the time, you know?
Yeah, unless he's forced to. Basically, Pac is the person, like, driving the entirety of this, while Kenny Omega's just reacting to it.
Yeah,
is the best way
of describing again,
it.
Which, again, how does this make Pac the heel?
Yeah, that you have to wonder is probably just because he's an asshole. That's the only reason why.
Yeah, I think that's the only reason is that he's an asshole. But you know what? Stone Cold Steve Austin was an asshole too, and everybody loved him. So, you know,
true. Point taken.
I mean, he was. His character was. He was an asshole. So mm-hmm. that never changed. You know, heel turner. You know, face turner. Otherwise, that never changed.
Mm-hmm. True.
So it was, you know, again, you know, it's okay. I just have to ask, how is Pac the heel when Kenny Omega has been ducking him this whole time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just one of those things where you kind of wonder about the once you think about the logistics enough, you're like, huh, yeah, he has been ducking him this entire time.
Yeah, I mean,
Michael Nakazawa does not mean as much to Kenny Omega as he likes to say he does.
Yeah, I mean. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think that the heel face dynamics in this company in a lot of ways are they're really kind of wacky land, you know.
I think they're very much are if you do the whole praise the elite at every given turn, they're going to be baby faces to you no matter what they do, but to like everyone else sort of like outside of that particular bubble, they're just going, the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's well, again, like
these guys are douchebags,
right? Like we always say about, you know, the way that they're doing the Lucha Bros is like, you know, they become de facto heels because they're up against the elite slash the elite's friends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
but really, I mean, what has Phoenix done that's particularly, you know, Rudo worthy?
Yeah.
I mean, you can make the argument for Pentagon, of course, because he was a Rudo for the longest time. I think it was only after he was on the U.S. Indies and everybody, you know, realized he's like one of the top three wrestlers in the world that he really began his Technico turn.
And even then, it's not like he acts like a full-fledged, pure-as-hell Technico. He's still the same cocky bastard that would just, you know, stick his hands in your face, taunt you accordingly, and, you know, break your arm at any given chance kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
It's just that he's kind of the coolest motherfucker on the planet when he does it, so...
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
You know.
Yeah, it's just other things, too. Like, God, what was I thinking of? Oh, yeah, like how is Emi Sakurai heel? You know? What was she doing that made her the heel in many of these women's matches? And also, where the hell has she been?
probably still working with stuff regarding Gato Move and other various things. I just wouldn't be surprised if like she pops up back up within the next 2-3 weeks or so for random match of the dark or something. So we'll wait and see on that.
I don't know.
That said, though. Let's just get into our main event first. Cover with pros and cons.
Yeah, let's get into the main event, which was, of course, an eye for an eye match, quote unquote, between our boy John Moxley, fresh from Osaka, where he beat Minoru Suzuki in a fantastic match.
Has to be match of the year contender by far.
When that match outdid a Hiromu versus Dragon Lee match, you know, it's something. Mm-hmm. And of course, he had to deal with, you know, what do you call it? The human fucking udon noodle.
Yep.
Zack Sabre Jr.
Oh my goodness. I laughed hard once I saw that interview and saw exactly what he called him.
Zach's part of that interview was pretty good too.
Yes, it was. It was phenomenal as well.
Jonathan Moxley.
Yeah, no, the idea of John Moxley basically being Suzuki Gun enemy number public enemy number one is a phenomenal trend to start
has
his
been.
fan career.
Has it not been fucking amazing though?
It's been fun, yeah, so
Has it
far
not been
into it.
amazing?
And
Well, you know what? We'll talk more about that when we record Strong Style Story this coming weekend. Actually, by the way, we're recording Strong Style Story this coming week. Just let you all
yes.
know.
And another thing that I'll point out as well too is that Santana held his part of the bargain here. They had a really good brawl between the two of them with the time limit that they were given to wrap up TV, basically.
Oh yeah,
But
no. It was a fun match. It was a very fun brawl.
yeah, I love the fact that both of them were selling the eye injuries to where like the peripheral vision was playing with them at times when Moxley was trying to bring Santana at one point into a backslide where it took him a couple of extra seconds to get the other arm around. And it even played into the ending as well, too, with Moxley jamming his thumb right into Santana's good eye, the two of them stumbling, and then Moxley managing to, like, just on instinct, get Death Rider to pull out the victory on this one.
Yeah, it seemed like he had to hesitate for a second after hitting that Death Rider too. Like he was like, "Oh shit," you know?
It's like, where'd he go? Where'd he go? Where'd he go? And then he finally stumbles into the cover, basically, for the
Yeah,
grace. So it
he's
was well
had.
pl played by both guys, and Ortiz doing his part as well, too, playing interference. So, fun main event.
It was a fun main event, but of course, you know, it ends with the entire Inner Circle beating down Moxley, including a shock appearance by the aforementioned Jeff Cobb.
Who just shows up, picks up Moxley, and just gives him a tour of the islands,
I forgot
which
what
is as simple as you can get.
I forgot they were in the same G1 Climax block, weren't they?
Yes, this will be their second match against each other, but it will be the first one on AEW TV.
Right. So yeah, as I remember, they had a good match during G1 too.
It was a good but short match between them in the G1 where of a couple of the spots felt a little bit awkward, but I think though now that they sort of know each other a little bit better, it could make for a really fun TV match next week around. So
Yeah, so that
again,
so I'm looking forward to that.
a lot of threads set up for next week, which is super exciting to be honest. You have
Yes.
the 10-man tag rumble basically, where we'll probably get our number one contenders for Revolution most likely out of it. You get a very important tag team title match this time between Omega and Hangman defending against the Lucha Bros. You get Moxley against Jeff Cobb, the aforementioned match, and then you also get the Essential Cody Wardlow steel cage match, determining whether he'll face MJF a Revolution by surviving it. That's the gist of it. So the Atlanta show is loaded next week.
Yeah, well, it's only four matches. I'm guessing maybe with the cage match. I'm guessing first of all that's going to be the main event, and secondly,
Yeah.
that's probably going to take like this may be th there may only be four matches on this show next
Yeah,
week.
that's what I'm thinking as well. Like there might be like one quick match as well. It could be just Nyla Rose squashing somebody for like a women's division wrap portion, but it does feel like that Atlanta episode is already loaded in terms of what they're going to be doing with times for matches and such.
So, all right, pros and cons.
Pros for sure, the Nyla Rose Riho women's title match.
Most definitely.
Pox promo for sure needs to be there. The Jeff Cobb shock appearance counts as a pro for me, just in the, again, emphasizing the point that Jon Moxley is a one-man island. And, Jericho's determined to take him out at any given cost before Revolution comes about. So there's that to consider as well. Nyla Rose punking out Kenny Omega backstage is a pro for me, just in showing that, yeah, this division is not going to be like the same, Valiant babyface defending role, which Riho played really well throughout this time, is just going to be, a one-woman murdering machine going throughout it.
Yep.
So that, and also say Darby Allin and Santana's promos near the beginning of the night too should be consideration just for building up some stuff moving forward too. So big fan of that. Cons-wise though, I will say just Jungle Boy MJF didn't click the same way that I think a lot of people hoped that it would. Outside of that, really, I can't really think of anything else bad in this show, to be honest, outside of just, or that I would consider like bad as a con, outside of just that entire Jungle Boy MJF segment, including pretty much everything involving it. Everything else was just okay for the most part.
Yeah.
And then the Honest Bro, so.
Yeah, honestly, I think I'm pretty much with you there. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's about it, really. I mean, I can't really add anything into this. Other than, I think that, you know, MJF, you know, like this is like, you know, this week's version of I banged DDP's daughter, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, grabbing his nuts, you know?
I just throw MJF into the con section consistently at this point. It'll be impressive when he makes a pro for once, so.
Yeah, I mean, he was threatening to for a while, but now, ever since, you know, he did the betrayal of Cody Rhodes that we saw coming from about 20 miles away, yeah, he has just not been delivered, and for so much, you know, and this is like a main event level program in AEW right now. It is just not working
for me. Yeah, and the problem is too is that on the long haul, once this stuff with Cody is done, if MJF doesn't make something out of it for himself there, I just don't think it bodes really well for him in his future programs within the AEW portion, because it's like, if you don't deliver on this thing with Cody Rhodes, who for even all my complaints on what I think of him as a performer, as a promo man, whatever it will be, Cody can carry big programs. He has shown that much so far within AEW and delivered some fairly powerful stuff in his time doing that, the Dustin match being the obvious kind of highlight of it. But if he can't deliver with Cody in this situation, I just don't think it bodes really well for him moving forward, because it's like, okay, who does he go to from here? And just, do we really care at that point?
Yeah.
It's concerning. So. Yeah.
Overall, though, it was a pretty good TV episode. I'm not sure we had anything really of consequence. Well, I'd say that back. You know, we obviously had two title matches, so yeah, those were of consequence. Yes. It's still a lot of you know, moving
revolution building.
Yeah, moving of the pieces. But yeah, Jeff Cobb making, you know, first the announcement of him and then the surprise appearance at the end. That was good. That was really good. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I dug that for sure. Again, we weren't expecting that at the very end, but the fact that they went ahead and did it, just good work by all parties all around to get that done and kind of give us a nice, shocking ending there to the episode to just really build things up. So,
and with that, that is episode 19 of AEW Dynamite, live from the HEB Center in Austin, Texas. Chris, any plugs?
For me specifically, you can go through Twitter and Instagram. You can find me at Brazilian Fury. You can also find my other podcast that I just started recently called Soundtracks on the Sticks. You can find that on Twitter at Sounds on Sticks. We covered Final Fantasy VIII soundtrack during the first pilot episode. We will be going into Donkey Kong Country 2 for our next episode there. Jordan and I have settled on that. So, really exciting stuff. Well, hopefully you'll be able to check that out as well if you have the time. Thanks.
In the meantime, I'm actually going to plug something that I have nothing personally to do with, but there is a book out called The Gimmicks. It is a debut novel by writer Chris McCormick. Ostensibly, it seems to be about the long-term effects of the Armenian genocide, but pro wrestling actually cuts a bit of a swath through this book so far. So, and in fact, you know, the very first page of the book is an anecdote about good old David Finlay. So,
oh, fun.
So yeah, check that out. It came out this. It's a 2020 release novel. It's in hardback. So it's The Gimmicks by Chris McCormick. So check it out. It's so far it's been a really good book. It, like I said, so far it seems to have more to do with backgammon and Armenia than it does pro wrestling. But you know, but you can't miss the cover because it has, you know, two pro wrestlers, one masked, one not, on the cover. So
yeah. Definitely. And in terms of quick things to read as well, too, for those of you who dug Death Note, check out Shonen Jump, because 87-page one-shot of Death Note continuing on the story did get published, and it's actually really, really good. So.
Yeah, it was. I was really impressed with that, so yeah. And also, read Chainsaw Man, because that strip is absolutely bonkers, and I love it. So, Chris, any last words?
Nothing else from me, outside of the fact that you can catch our other podcast here on the Pro Wrestling Only Network, Strong Style Story. We will be recording our next episode over the weekend to talk all things New Beginning Tour and break down a lot of the particular news that we got on certain dates, which involve more Osaka shows, Kobe Hall, and Madison Square Garden in late August. Yep. So stay tuned for that.
And not to mention, you know, two retirements coming up too. So
yeah, definitely.
In the very near future. So
be on the lookout for that.
And shout out Lawrence. He had fun at Mr. Bungle last night, so he couldn't make it tonight. And shout out to our buds on the network, Dave and Lee. I think this is a Days of Thunder week, isn't it?
Yes, I believe so. So be on the lookout for that Thursday night into Friday morning, folks.
Yep. So, okay. Until then, we'll see you next week.